Jaspreet Boparai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're back with RCR, Greenwashed with Don and Jaspreet. And we've talked in recent weeks with other scientists about funding and their sector. And recently we also read in the Farmers Weekly a headline from the current Minister of Science, Judith Collins, who said the science sector is not fit for purpose. Putting more money into a system that is not currently fit for purpose will not help achieve our goals as a nation. Now, I've been reading this sort of stuff for my entire farming life. It appears to me that science funding is a political football, depending on who's in power, depends where the money goes, depending on what system is in place. And apparently the system's never been right for anybody. I could be making that, just embellishing that a little bit. So to shed some light on it all is old friend Doug Eadmeads, Dr. Doug Eadmeads. He runs Ag Knowledge out of Hamilton, but he has a Masters of Science and PhD, and he is, of course, an ONZM recipient. Welcome, Doug. I know you've been involved in sort of drawing up papers for your recipe for science funding of New Zealand. What is that recipe? You might, before you let that recipe out, you might want to give us what was put in the cake in the last 20 years, how science has been managed, what the history lesson would be up to today, and what is the recipe for the baking of your cake for the science funding?
Okay, that's fair enough. I want to start with Judith Collins' comment.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Science, at the moment, the management of science is not fit for purpose, complex, fragmented, and overly competitive. Mm. I compare that with what I said in a paper I wrote 20 years ago. A new science management model is required, built on evidence-based and objective analysis of the needs of science and the needs and goals of New Zealand. And there is my dilemma in terms of where science is up to. The CRI Act was introduced by people like at a time where the formula was Rogernomics. And by that I mean it was a whole CRI Act on which the CRIs are based now is driven by political dogma and not based on the needs of science. And in my paper 20 years ago, I tried to work out what were the needs of science? What is it that's so special about science that needs a special type of management?
Yeah, and interesting, just for listeners' benefit, CRI is Crown Research Institute.
Yes.
Yeah, so good question. What did you deduce in answer to that question?
Good question. Science, to be effective for society, needs to be open. It needs to be objective. It needs to be impartial. All those are normative qualities of, if you like, public service science. The reforms put a wrap around all that and said that science had to be competitive. It was only going to be the only way to allocate funds was in using the at the time the market shall decide what's important, et cetera, et cetera. All these things were this dogma was introduced without considering what science actually needs in terms of being open, being non-competitive, being impartial, being objective. And that's to me, the crime of the CRI Act.
Mm. And from a layman's point of view, the counter for me would be, how do you make sort of science fit those four parameters when... Mm. When there's always a profit motive somewhere. There's always a profit motive.
Okay, fair enough. My going back 20 years ago when I wrote this original paper, my solution in terms of the management of science was to put science into a not-for-profit organisation model. Now, before people run away and say, oh, that's not cost-effective, blah, 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 Not-for-profit means not that the activity is not profitable, but the profits which are made are retained by the organisation. And so that was my solution, not-for-profit organisations. And if I was to have my say today, which of course I'm having, is that I would put the CRIs and back into a not-for-profit organisation. I'd bulk fund them in terms of giving money to the management overall, the boards of the CRIs, because that's where you get the best decisions made about allocative efficiency. At the moment, under the CRI Act, we get decisions made about fertilizer, about science, made in the rarefied atmosphere of Wellington. And these people in Wellington wouldn't know science if they tripped over it, in my view. And they certainly are in no position to make sensible decisions about what's important in terms of science looking forward in New Zealand.
Now, if the current the CSIs that we have, the Crown CRIs, the Crown Research Institute, we've got seven of them. They account, in terms of revenue last year, something just shy of $1 billion together. They employ 4,300, give or take a few employees, scientists, whosoever is in there. The initial papers that I see, that when the government took over this restructure, they said that the old science system was not giving us any confidence that there was any value for money. Scientists had captured the system like a new religious priesthood, independent of society and only accountable to themselves. Has this new model, has this freed science, who are they accountable to now? Because for me, what I see the rationale behind it, that they are answerable only to themselves, I still see a lot of dubious science, or I see a lot of political science, especially with this, you know, Don and I speak about climate and the decarbonization and all the hysteria about it. Has something actually improved? If you're suddenly responsible to the markets, you've suddenly become commercial, aren't you more susceptible now to being captured?
Oh, absolutely. And that's one of my criticisms of the CRIs and the way they're working, is that they've become captured for commercial and political reasons. Now, that's the complete antithesis of what is needed for science. Science must be open, free, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I'm not saying by that the old public service model served us well. It didn't. It needed to be some shake-up. But to jump into a commercial model was quite the wrong move, in my opinion. So we have now we've got CRIs, which are very commercially sensitive. They're very politically sensitive. Because of the CRI Act says, well, in fact, its application is that that if you don't toe the political line, you won't get funded. And a brilliant example of that in this day and age is of course, dare I say this, climate change and NIWA. NIWA dare not criticise our current political policies on climate change, not because they don't agree with it, but because they cannot take the risk of losing funding. That's the danger of the commercialising and politicising of science.
And I haven't listened to the complete interview, but Don was mentioning one that one of our breakfast hosts, Paul Brennan, did with Philip Duncan from Weather Watch, speaking about the fact that NIWA is almost a power into itself. There's no answers there. We've had Ian Wishart on Reality Check Radio talking about the fact that there's no answers available from NIWA, that why it has missed nearly 80% of the biggest storms over the last couple of hundred years when comparing, you know, the intensity of Gabriel and so on. NIWA also recently was in the news for having bought $700,000 worth of diesel utes, which I don't get if they've got it, but, you know, for an outfit that's everything about emissions. These guys are a law unto themselves.
Well, they're not a law unto themselves. They're a law unto government policy, I would say.
Yes.
And that's science. The public isn't well served when science gets captured like that. As I said before, science serves the the public better or best when it's open for discussion and dialogue. Now, you here's a little test for you. There are many, many, many factors which affect the climate on Earth. But I know damn well that if I sent a proposal to Wellington, to the powers that be down there, suggesting I investigate other factors apart from CO2, which affect climate on Earth, the funding would be zero. That's a measure of how politicised and commercialised science has become. And it's a tragedy for science, a tragedy for our society. That's the situation.
So just as a wee counter to that, farming seems to be fair game for a tax. So, I might just play the devil's advocate for a moment on the science fraternity.
Sure.
It seems to be that the science fraternity wants special treatment. Farmers are unsubsidised. Why don't scientists go and make it on their own in the real world?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, that's a real awkward question.
It's not awkward at all when you understand science. Mm. Science, as of all the professions, science is completely unique because you can't predict the outcomes from science from the start, and therefore science shouldn't be treated like any other commodity, which is here are the inputs, here are the outputs, therefore the contract says this. That's not the way science operates. Another way of looking at that is that of all the professions, let's take lawyer, accounting, teaching, medicine, all of those professions are driven by a political need for their particular activity. Science is different. It's the only discipline that is completely, what's the right word? Struggling to find the right word. It's completely
appropriate. Appropriate.
Well, it's voluntary.
Right.
You know, yes.
You have to have accountants do the accounts, or lawyers do the lawyering, or teachers or doctors, blah, blah, blah. But science, this special thing called science, is actually, it's a voluntary thing as to whether the government have it or not. And that's why I would join forces with Jack and Roloff and say, given the importance of science, and we need to look back at history and see the importance of science, given the importance of science, why is it so underfunded? Why is it so underfunded? Because the politicians can make decisions about we're not going to fund it. They can't. Yep. They can't skimp over lack of funding for health. We just heard about the funding of cancer drugs, etc. But science is completely voluntary for society.
Mm. So when we hear this, this comparator, that always seems to be science funding relative to the nation's GDP should be, the argument used to be, I think it still is, around 2%. And depending on which figure you research in New Zealand, it seems to be one person says it's 1.3 and another person says that another output says it's 2. It's very subjective, it seems. And why can't we get accurate figures? I don't follow that.
Well, because there is no accurate figure. Mm. How much funding goes to science depends on the value that the public, politicians, put on science.
Mm.
And I would like it to be higher. But for political reasons, it's not, because, as I said, science is expendable. You don't have to fund it. And we get the ridiculous situation under the CRA Act. I watched this over 20 years. From year to year, and I'm talking about ag research now, from year to year, ag research has balanced the books by stripping off staff.
Right.
As a means of balancing the books, it's absolutely absurd that they go about it in that way. The value of science is being, of agricultural science in particular, is being stripped from society.
Yeah, and yet, see, the society, and again, I'll play the counter. Society is probably reading how much farming or agriculture is getting to do methane research in New Zealand, and a climate centre of excellence being set up for about another $360 million, I think. There seems to be money for this sort of stuff. There's big numbers being talked about. Mm-hmm. And I think it was Jane Smith that said, was that, this right, Jaspreet, that we're up to $900 million now with regard to methane research.
Yes.
And so people are being fed this line that there's all this money going into primary sector science funding, as if we're getting a privileged, the sector's getting privilege. It doesn't feel like that from our side of the fence, I can assure you. We're never sure.
Agricultural science being privileged, for heaven's sake. Go back to the start of the reforms. I think there's figures are roundly. About $130 million was spent on agricultural research at the start of the CRIs. Now the public input into agricultural science is about $70 million. And to cope with that, they've got rid of a lot of staff or generate a lot of commercial, inverted commas, activity, which doesn't benefit many people at all. So I cannot agree that somehow agricultural science has been privileged in this manner. That's bullshit.
Well, and so what I was getting at is, if you read the media, it's often headlined science, methane research or research to such and such is getting XYZ. And of course, the kicker for me is to read the next sentence is often over 7 years or over 5 years or something. It's just not one chunk put up front.
Yeah.
So it's a bit like when we get our annual, when the budget is presented in May, and it's a certain sector is going to get $50 million over 4 years, that sort of thing. So that's a headline grabber. Anyway, I'm not trying to dismiss the level of or meagerness of ag funding for science, but
what are we getting for it? I look at, science is also very lucrative for some, Doug. I'm looking at NEWA's balance sheets for last year, for the year ended 30th August 2023. The chief executive there, on a base of $744,164. You know, $750,000 there in a salary, plus there's others at the package. There's a huge increase in contractor costs there and all of this. And one wonders, what are we getting for that?
That's what you get when you commercialize science and make it sound like business. So you get these exorbitant salaries. And all that does is increases the overheads in terms of doing science and chases other people away. The other anachronism of the whole system is that one of the ideas was that by commercializing science we would attract industry into funding, but that doesn't happen because. Under commercial operations, people want to keep their IP secret. I know companies which will not invest in ag research because they fear they'll lose their competitive advantage in terms of their IP. These are the consequences of the CRI Act, commercializing science. It's appalling what's happened. It really is a disgrace, a disgrace. I'll call it a disgrace, might as well.
Well, look, you've been presenting your side of this story for a long time, and my question now then is, how do you think it can be realigned to something more logical?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I go back to my point I made earlier that if I ruled the world, which clearly I don't, I would make the CRIs not-for-profit organisations. I would turn science back to the public good attitude. Sure, we don't want to go back to the old public service financial act and all that sort of stuff. That made things inefficient. But going back to a not-for-profit organisation where science is returned to its normative position, in other words, public good science, for the good of the public, and that any commercial activity be extremely limited and careful that it doesn't compromise the core values of science. And I see that day after day where press releases come out from the CRIs, and when you read them, there's nothing there. I'll use another example. Farmers I speak to now get nothing from AgResearch because there's nothing there to have. It's been bled out. And in terms of agricultural research, we're living on research that was done 20, 30 years ago, still living on it. There's nothing new coming through.
So, yeah, there's got to be a change again. I mean, and what I've seen is in my time in farmer politics is this political football. I've never really heard from too many scientists because I didn't know that many, to be fair, apart from yourself and Jock and perhaps Jacqueline and a few others. But, yeah, we all hear this story. And, yeah, we've even had, I remember the debate in 15 years ago, it was around tax credits, whether that was going to be the saviour for getting appropriate funding into the sector. You know, you can meddle until you make it worse. And you generally, with meddling, you make stuff worse. Is that right? Best to go back to base, start again. And that's a message that I think we're getting clearly coming through to us on a number of fronts, that if we could get this coalition government to actually terminate some concepts that have been around and titivated around the edges for a long, long time, terminate them and start again would be a whole lot better than trying to resurrect them and recalibrate them. Maybe the science fraternity is one of those.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I welcome this reform, but I stand in fear and trepidation as to the basis on which it's going to be made. As I said before, science needs to be overhauled, and the management models and how science is managed must be based around that science is a voluntary public good activity for the good of all people. And the commercial model is complete antithesis of that.
So what you're talking about, this review, you're meaning the science advisory group set up by Sir Peter Gluckman.
Yes.
That's what you're talking about. So that's the review that's underway at the moment. Have you had a chance to have input into it?
I'm well distanced from the power players. I did send, as part of my submission, the paper I wrote, is the commercial model appropriate for science? And the conclusion that science should be returned to its normative activity and put into a not-for-profit organisation, because that best serves society in terms of the values, importance and integrity of science.
Well, that paper you wrote, how long ago did you write that paper?
20 years ago, Don.
2004. And gosh, it stood the test of time, hasn't it?
Well, I don't know how many people read it. I wrote a subsequent paper, what was then called the Ministry of Research and Science and Technology, asked for submissions about back in 2006 about the current funding system, and they were talking about tinkering with the current system, and I made the point in my proposition to them was that the philosophies and theories upon which the current science system have been developed create an environment which is the antithesis for that required for an open, healthy, vigorous, productive science sector. I only hope that this reform is going to take us back to that place, not back in the negative sense of old public service, blah, 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 but back in the sense of putting science in a place where it can best serve society.
When I see the words here, user pays, it worries me, because user pays, whosoever has more money is going to pay more. And that's what is going to deliver outcomes for for anyone who can afford them. Yeah. And outcomes that suit the agenda of whatever is the flavor of the day. Mm. We've had the likes of AgriZero NZ putting in, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars of commitments from primary sector into methane, just some sort of methane breakthroughs. They are investing in companies in the US for all sorts of boluses and whatnot. And who wants that? Who asked them for that? Nobody did.
Well, they go there because it's going to make them a profit, irrespective of whether it's good for New Zealand or not.
Exactly. It's getting them profit, but is that profit translating into profit behind the farm gate? It's just not.
You could run a CRI and say, we made a profit by laying off half the staff. That's how bizarre the application of the commercial model is to science. Get rid of the very essence of a good science organisation, which is the people and their mental ability.
I can't help but talk of Dr. Jock Allison, who's no longer with us at this point. You know, some of the oldest papers I've gone back and looked up Jock on it. He's always said science is only good if it is doing some good for the farmers.
Absolutely.
And there's been no one, I think, whose contribution is greater, Don. Would you agree?
He's a brilliant example of what I'm talking about. In fact, one of the reasons why I'm struggling to come to terms with his loss is because he asserted once again the importance of agricultural science. McMeekin said science is no good unless it's applied on the farm. Well, Jock was that person. And he had without going into the negativity of public service at the time, he had new science in terms of the public good that it could do for farmers and New Zealand. And we've lost those people. And that's what's so sad about Jock's departing, is that he was one of the, not a pioneer of that, because McMeekin pioneered that earlier, but he was certainly a new voice activating those thoughts. And I hope I'm repeating it well, that the purpose of agricultural science is to serve the public. Purpose of agricultural science is a normative activity for what is best for society. And you don't get those decisions being made in a corporate atmosphere.
Not.
Yeah, and I think if there's an analogy for Jock, if there's an obstacle like a roadblock or let's say a gate across the road, he'd just go around the fence post at the side and go round and carry on.
Yeah.
He had a way to get through the morass of bureaucrats, and and he cleaned it up, cleaned it out. So
as I said to I sent Hillary an email, Hillary, his wife, an email the other day, saying that I so much wish that he was my boss in science, because we shared a common set of values about what science is and how it should be used and how it should benefit society. Very few people left now who share that view.
Yeah, and I think there's a few of us owe it to Jock to make sure we kick a few of the things that we've got close to tipping back in the bin.
Absolutely.
We finish the job. We've got to finish the job, and the methane nonsense is one of them. So, well, I mean, that was his big ticket item toward the end. And, you know, if some of us don't see the end of that before we're finished, I'll be gutted. We've got to do it for Jock and people like you.
Yeah. Yep. You mentioned methane, you know, and the science is coming in day after day. Methane is completely irrelevant. And why isn't people in NIWA Ag Research talking about that aspect? Because the funding depends on saying otherwise. And I know many people back and colleagues back from my day who would totally agree with me in my views about climate change, but dare not speak out for the loss of job or loss of money. And that's the tragedy that this commercialization of science has placed science in.
Yeah, and that's why the politicization of it has made it even worse. I mean, we've tied this country up in knots around climate policy. We've even got it in free trade agreements. I mean, some of us have been warning about this stuff for 20 years.
Yeah.
But the machine called New Zealand government just kept carrying on. And people like James Shaw, he must think, hey, his job was so easy. It just all fell into place. And then he leaves Parliament and his job is done.
Absolutely.
Mm. Yeah, but anyway, we should get back on track a little bit more.
What's the track, Don?
What is the track? How are we going to turn this current minister with Sir Peter Gluckman's perhaps review to something useful or potentially it'll just be another review sitting on the shelf? What the minister does seem to have in her DNA, she's going to change things. Looking at this article in the Farmers Weekly, you just know that between the writing of that article and now, even the political lobbying will be immense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hope this review actually does the job. In other words, gets science out of the pit that it's currently in. But I'm old enough to fear the worst. Sir Peter Gluckman is a very capable man, of course, but he's also a very, very astute politician.
Yes.
And therein lies the problem that I see. Will this review overcome that problem?
Yeah, and that's the problem. I've met Sir Peter. He won't remember me, but yeah, I also have that view that he is a seriously political animal.
Mm-hmm.
And when you meet these people, you're perhaps in awe of their knowledge and their talent, but also for someone like me, deeply cynical, because I know that, but like I have to say, Simon Upton and people like him, they can sell you out quite quickly, and and then they come back looking for redemption years later, like Simon Upton appears to be doing now.
Exactly.
I mean, I just, you have no trust in the executive powers of government when this has been going on for my adult life. People wonder why you and me and others are cynical. We've suffered the backlash from all this stuff in many phases of our life, and you do question it. You do have to question it. But see, most people don't, Doug. Most people are too comfortable and are too trusting. Anyway, it's where we are.
But it's interesting to remind ourselves that who championed the CRI Act through Parliament? One Simon Upton, based on Rogernomic philosophy. That's the problem.
Funny that.
But there's a few key names that happened around 1985-1990, and those are two that, I don't diminish that when New Zealand had to do something. It was in serious trouble in 85.
No question about that.
We were technically insolvent and we had to reform. Where the reforms went, I mean, Jaspreet picked up the concept of user pays before, and I off here just prior to this, I said, well, user pays to me was a good idea. Was a really good idea because it was going to mean less bureaucracy, and only those of us that wanted services would actually have to pay for the services. I didn't know that the expansion of government was going to be as crazy as it's been in the last 35 years.
Yeah,
You have user pays and government. You don't just have user pays. We've dug the hole deep, getting out of that hole and leaving New Zealanders to get on with their own. And making their own way is something that successive governments just don't seem to want to allow to happen. It's not convenient to have people
in control of their own destinies,
yes,
actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, so we can't trust those scientists. They might go away and do their own thing. So we have this contestability bullshit.
Yeah, so look, we'll draw this to a close, but okay. I need to implore our listeners to go and into Doug's website. I just need to find it again here. It's not an active website anymore, but it's still there, Doug Edmead.
It's not active.
It doesn't seem to be that updated, Doug. You need to get back to it.
Your website, Doug, is at acknowledge.co.nz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But This is 20 years old, this paper.
Yes, I know.
It needs to be updated.
He has another another page called Just Doug Edmeads, and it's got his publications, it's got his services and all sorts of things on there. And there's a whole treasure trove of documents in there that do have a similar theme. So you've been consistent.
I hope so.
You've been consistent all the way through. Doug has also written two or three books, and I don't have the names of those in front of me either. I did before. But look, Doug, you've put a lot of effort into your practical work and your business, but you've also put a lot of effort into being an advocate for your science sector. And not many people do that. So we're grateful to have had you on RCR Greenwashed again. You were one of our first guests about 18 months ago, and good to have you back. So thanks for coming on. Hopefully we can make a difference with our listeners.
My pleasure, Don. My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Doug.
Bye-bye.
Are you loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it, and right now they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.